welcome everybody to another edition of the Thunder Buddies podcast. Preseason is almost over. I'm Eric Horn here with Brett Dawson.
I'm excited to be here.
Also, somebody who we hope is excited to be here, we have Scott Cassiola from the New York Times. Scott, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, guys. Are you guys the Thunder Buddies? Who are the buddies?
Yeah, that's us. Yeah.
Some would call us buddies.
Okay.
Yeah. There's been a series of buddies, but we're the last buddy standing, sort of.
Are you guys actually buddies?
Kinda.
This is like season three of buddies.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, we're probably a little tired of each other by this point, but you know, we're soldiering on.
We're the longest. No, I think Darnell and Anthony went 2 years as buddies. So this is actually season five of the Thunder Buddies podcast.
Gotcha.
But like season two of our run.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
so it's like season two. So it's like season five overall. So the show's getting a little tired and we're doing some stunt casting with guest stars. And so Scott Cassiola is here.
Captivating stuff. We already lost like half our listeners.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fine. We'll get some new ones. Scott, we're going to start with a little background on you. You work for the New York Times. Tell us a little bit about your journey to the New York Times and what you're currently doing now.
Oh, wow. All right. So I started working in newspapers at a really small newspaper in Massachusetts, and I covered high school sports for a couple of years. And then I covered University of Connecticut basketball. I did one season with the men and one season with the women at the New Haven Register in Connecticut. And then after that, I went to the Memphis Commercial Appeal, where I kind of did a little bit of everything for 4 years. A lot of Ole Miss football, actually. A little bit of Grizzlies stuff, but I wasn't really like the NBA guy there. And after that, I went to the Wall Street Journal for another 4 or 5 years, and then did a little bit of everything there as well. And then about 4 years ago, I came to the Times, and I started as a Knicks writer, and then we did an experiment called Not the Knicks, where I didn't cover the Knicks. We did like a you may have heard the Knicks are not very good. They weren't very good that season.
The Knicks were particularly not very good that year, correct?
Really, really bad that year, and set records for Knicks futility, which is a pretty high bar. So we did a thing where it was my favorite assignment of my career. They sent me all over the country to find basketball teams who are actually good. I wrote about a sixth grade team of girls.
This is the one I remember.
Dominating boys.
That's the one I was going to throw out, the sixth grade girls. That's the story I most remember.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
From hashtag not the Knicks.
And I think the best part of that series was that our crack team of graphic designers did a logo for it, the Not the Knicks logo, and it was the Knicks logo with a no smoking sign over it. So that was... It
was incredible.
That's where I caught on to your work when I was here as the web editor, and I started following you because, as Brett said, that was a putrid time for Knicks basketball, and it was almost like they were. I think I remember like reading like the explanation, like they were doing you a favor, like they were like getting you somewhere to where you could rest from like the futility of Knicks basketball, and. I think you did some great work during that time. I mean, you still do great work, but it was fun to read.
Thanks, man.
Hey, Scott, as a weird aside, did I first meet you in Lexington? Did I first meet you at the John Calipari, like, arrival? I can't remember if I...
Yes!
I know I had talked to you before that, but I think that was the first time. You came up from Memphis, right, to write about the first days of Calipari leaving Memphis. Yeah. Yeah, what a fun time.
That news conference was hilarious too. I mean, because he was like, his accent kind of changed when he got to Kentucky a little bit through that first press conference.
Yeah.
He's talking about like relatives who were coal miners.
Yep.
I'm like, we never heard any of this stuff before.
Dandelion soup. They ate dandelion soup. Yeah. His grandparents. Yeah.
Oh, amazing. I still remember that. Yeah, that was quite a time.
Yeah, good times. It's not the Knicks, but it was a heady. Those were heady days.
It's part of the reason we brought you on the podcast is the Knicks connection. The Thunder opens the preseason with the Knicks on Thursday. You know, you're more covering the league in itself. I mean, right now you said you're in Cleveland tonight for the opener, Cleveland and Boston. But we wanted to get you on here to talk a little bit about the league, obviously Carmelo Anthony coming to Oklahoma City, and just anything else that you wanted to kind of talk about that pertains to you know, Carmelo or anything else that Thunder like.
We should start with Carmelo, who plays for not the Knicks now.
I learned this yesterday. They traded him.
It's true.
This is so basically, did I break the news to you? Because I think I texted you yesterday as a reminder. Yeah.
When I say not the Knicks, I'm not the Knicks. So, no, I'm kidding. I mean, it seems like he's happy there. I mean, I haven't, from what I've been reading, it seems like he's having some fun. He's playing well too, right?
Yeah, he had a good preseason. He looked good. I guess what I want to I'll start by asking you this. We have had a great sort of experience with Carmelo. He's a pleasure in terms of like a guy to cover. And that's notable not in the sense, I mean, look there's a lot of guys who are fun guys to talk to. Steven Adams is a fun guy to talk to. But Carmelo went through New York and you know, you're in the New York media. People talk about the New York media all the time. And so I just wondered what your impressions were of just sort of how he handled that whole experience, the New York experience, as a guy who was both a star player and the leader of disappointing teams, and how he handled what comes along with that in New York.
I honestly, from a media standpoint, I mean, it's hard to, it's quite a significant glare here in New York in terms of it's a lot of papers, it's a lot of aggressive reporting. You know, they'll put you on the back page of the tabloids, and it's not always very nice. To his immense credit, like, he handled it about as well as anyone possibly could have during some really difficult seasons. I think he got a little bit more slack from the media because he was so sort of congenial with us. You know, he's a very likable guy. And what you guys are seeing, I think that's kind of just him in terms of how he deals with reporters, and he answers every question, and he kind of has a smile. I mean, even when the team was really horrendous, he always kind of, you know, talked and answered questions as best he could. And I think that bought him a lot of capital with the media here, even when he wasn't maybe playing great. So he's very savvy in that sense, but I also think probably it's pretty genuine too. I think he's a pretty friendly guy and pretty good to deal with from a media point of view.
Scott, you know, a lot of people nationally and locally have had questions about Carmelo Anthony and how he'll mesh offensively. You know, we've seen some glimpses of it in the preseason where he's been this deadly catch and shoot 3-point shooter a la Olympic Melo. Brett's written about it for the Oklahoman.
Yeah.
But I mean, just being able to watch him while he was like the primary guy with the Knicks for the most part of his career, like, he's now coming to a team with two superstars in Russell Westbrook and Paul George. Like, how do you see this playing out? Do you think this thing is going to work, and do you think he's going to mesh well with those guys offensively?
Yeah, I think I think it'll work for Carmelo. I think, you know, he respects both of those guys. You know, he had a reputation in New York for, and rightly so, for kind of dominating the ball. You know, I don't think Russ and Paul George would let him get away with that. And I don't think Carmelo at this stage of his career really wants to dominate the ball. I think he wants to be the Olympic Carmelo that you guys referred to. Like, on those Olympic teams, he was great. He didn't back guys down. He, you know, his body's taken a toll over the years. I don't think he wants to be doing that anymore. He would much rather like spot up and let Russ create and shoot from the outside. I mean, he's a terrific outside shooter. So I don't think his ego is going to get in the way. You know, I think a lot of guys also have kind of come to the realization. They look at the Warriors, they look at how they have meshed, how they've made it work, and they're like, you know, none of those guys on the Warriors, none of their reputations have taken hits because they're maybe getting, you know, a couple fewer shots a game or whatever. And in fact, it's been enhanced because they're so sort of selfless. So I think that probably resonates with a lot of stars now, that they have to compete at that level with the, with a team like the Warriors. They have to form these super teams. They have to kind of suppress your own ego, and maybe you're not going to score 25 points a night. And I think that's okay. I think Carmelo, especially for a guy at that stage of his career, winning really is important to him. I don't think it's going to be an issue. And I think it's probably a relief to some extent that he doesn't have to have the ball in his hands all the time.
That's an interesting idea. I think you're right about the Warriors thing from both those standpoints, both from the idea that, you know, you can look at the way those guys have been treated for doing that, but also the idea that, like, you can't win unless you're going to do this now. Like it used to be that you had to have two superstars to get anything done, and now it does feel like you have to have three.
That's why the Kyrie move was interesting, I thought, because he's the one sort of outlier where he didn't really want to be sharing the limelight for whatever reason. That's what was sort of so strange. In this new era of super team building, Kyrie was the one guy who opted out of that and said, I want the stage to myself, more or less.
I think when you win a title, too, it kind of gives you leeway to do things on your own terms. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I don't know Kyrie's thought process on this. I think his explanation of this whole thing has been kind of odd and strange. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you win that title, it kind of, you can kind of go in any direction and people can't really say any way or another because you're a made man. You already have a title. Kevin Durant could go play in, I don't know, he can go play for the Westchester Knicks next year if he wanted to and nobody would care. They would just be like, oh, you know, Durant. Well, actually, people would care.
They would make a lot of memes. They would make memes with the Westchester Knicks t-shirt, logo on his t-shirt. You know, like that would happen.
Yeah.
A lot of that.
And it would be weird if it was Durant because people just roast Durant for no matter what he does now because of the way he left the Thunder. But I guess what I'm trying to say is the title kind of solidifies things in that, you know, no matter what move Kyrie Irving made, he does have a championship in hand, and he was a big part of winning that championship and taking down the dominant team of his era. So it's kind of like, okay, while you're leaving LeBron, that's a little bit crazy. At the same time, you won your title. Go forge your own path. Do what you got to do. You're a made man.
That's an interesting notion. Yeah. I think like he's the guy who faces the most potential heat, though, I think, this season. Of all the guys who moved, if it doesn't go well for some of these guys, you know, some of these guys were traded. Some of these guys went into situations where they have a better chance to win. Kyrie's the one guy who, if it goes poorly, everybody's going to say, like, man, this is what you get for leaving LeBron.
I will say this. I think he's putting a 50-piece on Cleveland tonight. And this podcast is probably going to be pretty old. This podcast is probably going to be pretty old when most people get their hands on it. But I feel like he's putting a 50 on Cleveland tonight.
All right. Bold prediction.
Boldprediction.com.
I don't know. That's pretty bold also if he sort of like freezes out his new teammates already and doesn't pass to Gordon Hayward.
He's got a championship. It's the first game.
I know, but send the wrong message to your teammates. Just go out and take 30 shots or whatever.
Who on the Celtics is going to tell him to stop shooting? Okay, what is Gordon Hayward going to be like? Hey, don't do that, Kyrie. That's not nice. First game of the season. Jason Tatum going to step to him?
Gordon Hayward's going to tell his coach
on him. I'm not saying that's the issue, but I'm just saying like it doesn't. I don't know. If they want to be a successful team, that's not maybe the right approach.
I didn't say they were going to win. I just said he's going to drop a 50-piece.
Kyrie is and we're sort of veering off into the league, but that's okay. That's what you do. You cover the league. I don't know a lot about Kyrie, and I don't know if that's because like they were sort of, you know, they were a non-factor before LeBron got there, and then once LeBron got there, LeBron is so much the story. My understanding since Kyrie has left, just from some people in Boston, is like he is like Russell Westbrook level unknowable, right? He's like hard to get a real feel for.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, I mean, his answers to questions are sort of vague, and he's kind of. He alludes to things, but you're not exactly sure what he means. And even this morning, he was at a shoot around. People asked him, can you can you finally say, why did you demand the trade? And he just kind of went, everyone's trying to figure it out. I want to put that to rest. But then he didn't really put it to rest. And he said, I'll never pinpoint anything because it's not what real grown-ups do. And I'm like, well, I don't know. What does that even mean? He doesn't want to say publicly why he demanded a trade. So he does, that's his prerogative. But people are still going to speculate and try to get to the root of it. And I'm sure the stuff that's out there has a lot of truth to it. But, you know, I mean, I also think as great as LeBron is, it's probably not always easy to play with him. I mean, he casts such an enormous shadow. And,
yep.
He's such a humongous personality. But the weird thing is just from, I mean, I don't pretend to know Kyrie either at all. But just from sort of the outside looking in and being around the team a little bit the last couple of years, I mean, he was a huge star, even though he played alongside LeBron. Yeah. I mean, he's a global superstar. And he is great in the finals. Like, that part of it to me was like, well, I mean, all right, you don't have the stage to yourself, but you still had an enormous stage, and people, when you were in the finals, and just like, I mean, he won that game against the Warriors basically by himself. He was tremendous. That part of it, I didn't quite get, because I thought everyone recognized that he is one of the greats, and, you know, I don't think he necessarily needed to leave to have a bigger stage. How much bigger could it really get? You know?
Yeah. I just think these guys want something different, and they want their own space or whatever it is. We'll see how that turns out.
Maybe he didn't like living in Cleveland. You know?
That's a distinct possibility.
I've heard Joakim Noah talk about it.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem to like
it. That's true. I mean, you know, the guy's 25. He wanted to live somewhere else. I mean, who are we? I mean, we changed jobs.
Yeah. And again, he reached the pinnacle of his career, and he probably said, hey, maybe I want to go live somewhere else. Maybe I want to try something different. All right, let me divert this back to Thunderland, or even Knicks Land if we want to, probably more so Thunderland. But, Scott, I remember you came for the Jordan event when Jordan came to honor Russell Westbrook. I think that was back in November of 2016. And this team is obviously a lot different looking than that team you saw when you were here. I mean, how incredible is it to you what this team was able to mold into? I mean, that was even pre Taj Gibson, Doug McDermott. Like, this was, you were here when it was Domantas Sabonis starting at power forward. Like, this was that iteration of the Thunder that was like, oh boy, this is not great. But they were still somehow staying afloat, staying above 500 with Russell Westbrook carrying a heavy load. Like, you know, a lot's going to have changed when you come back to Oklahoma City this week.
I mean, it's remarkable what they did in the offseason in terms of getting those two guys. I remember I literally for like 3 months had a file on my laptop with the sub that was called like Carmelo traded to Houston. And so I had like, you know, 1200 words ready to go, just ready for the Houston deal to happen. And then like that weekend, when Carmelo finally went to the Thunder, it was just like, whoa, it just kind of, it really came out of nowhere. I mean, I hadn't really heard anything about that as being a distinct possibility until like the night before it actually happened. So, I mean, they deserve a ton of credit for, like, really trying to make this happen. And then locking up Russ on the extension, which I know is huge for that franchise, it's pretty remarkable. I mean, this is for them to kind of keep things intact and to even, like, get significantly better. I think they really won the off season. So we'll see. I think your question earlier about how does it mesh? I mean, obviously that's sort of the question. And you guys know more about this than I do. I don't know much about their depth. I mean, how's the bench looking?
It's hard to say because we haven't seen it all. You know, they went out and signed Patrick Patterson, who hasn't played yet. Alex Abrines, who I think is maybe their best. He's certainly their best wing scorer off the bench. But, it, you know, he was a good, solid player last year. He would be expected to play a bigger role. He only played one preseason game because of a knee injury. So it's we don't have a great sense, I don't think, of how good their bench is going to be. They don't, you know, they got some weird situation. They added Raymond Felton. And really, if you look at them last year, like if they had just had Raymond Felton last year, they would have been a lot better team just because they needed somebody competent with some NBA experience. You know, they tanked whenever Westbrook went off the floor. They were just so bad.
Right.
That would have helped them a lot last year. So they'll have that element of it this year. They'll stagger those guys. So you're going to see Carmelo or Paul George play some minutes with the bench. So it should be better. But how much of a strength or weakness it is really hard to say until we see Patterson, I think.
What do you think Carmelo is going to do Thursday? I mean, do you think they'll feed him a lot against the Knicks?
Well, I mean, you tell me. Do you feel like Carmelo would go into that game with any kind of incentive to roast the Knicks?
No, because the main guys who he – Phil's not there anymore. He's friends with the guys who are still on the team who were there when he was there. I don't think if Phil were still like – the president of the team, I think it might be different, but the fact that he's gone, Carmelo outlasted him. He kind of won that battle in a sense. But I think you're right that there's no, like, I don't think there's much vitriol that Carmelo has towards the organization. And I mean, they honored his request to get out of there. Like they, you know, and they didn't get a ton back in return, and they were still willing to make that move just to, you know, both kind of move on from Carmelo and sort of honor his wishes. So I think you're right that he's not gonna, it's not the Kyrie LeBron dynamic that we might see tonight, assuming LeBron plays. I think it's a little bit more muted. So it's going to be interesting, though. I mean, it's going to be weird for me to see him in a Thunder uniform. That's kind of surreal.
It's still weird for us.
I still walk in. There are a lot of days when I walk into practice still, and I'm like, what are Paul George and Carmelo Anthony doing here? You know, it just until they play real games and they play some meaningful games, it just still feels really strange. It feels like they just kind of dropped in for a visit, like just to see Russ for a little bit and hang out.
It was particularly fun today, Scott. They had, at the end of practice, Paul George and Carmelo Anthony, they usually practice on the far end at the end of practice and shoot with like Jeremy Grant, guys like that, guys that play the perimeter. But they came over with Raymond Felton and Daniel Hamilton, who were doing like one-on-ones, and they came over and started doing one-on-ones. And basically, if you scored, you got to stay on. If you stopped the guy, you went to offense. And if you stopped the guy, you went to offense. If you scored, you got to stay on offense. And they were just going at each other, man. It was fun. And Carmelo Anthony was calling Raymond Felton a toddler, and he was calling him a kid. He's like, "We got a toddler here. We got an infant. It's an infant." And he was just talking all kinds of trash, and it was just fun, man. But Carmelo's brought a different kind of energy to the practices, I think. It's been fun to be around him so far. He's been a good sport, and it's just like you were saying. It's still kind of weird to think that Carmelo Anthony is a Thunder player. It's really odd.
It is. You know, Scott, you were talking about the media interacting with him and talking about how he's a likable guy. That seems to be the case for everybody. Like teammates seem to really like him. I talked to a couple people for that Olympic story, and Mike Krzyzewski. And even Paul George was saying, you know, when he got around those other great players, there was just so much sort of admiration and respect for him. Like, guys just really like being around him. Was that the case in New York, too, even as things were bad?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was interesting. We don't really always know what's going on behind the scenes.
Sure.
And the fact that the team was so bad for so long, it's kind of like, I mean, they weren't even like competing some of those seasons by the end of the year. So it's kind of like, well, I mean, does leadership even matter in those situations? But it was interesting after he left, sort of posthumously, there was I think NBA. I can't remember who did the poll. Maybe it was NBA.com, but somebody did a poll where they asked everybody on all the teams, like, who was the best teammate on the team. And Carmelo won that on the Knicks, like hands down, like, he was the overwhelming choice among his teammates as their favorite guy. So I thought that was kind of indicative that, you know, what we see as reporters was kind of like also what teammates were around. Like, he's just kind of a fun guy. Like, you guys saw at practice today, kind of just a fun guy to be around. But those were really dark days with the Knicks. So, I mean, who knows what was actually going on. And he had so much friction with Phil.
That's the other thing.
Probably polluted the whole thing.
How bizarre. From a distance, that seemed like the weirdest situation. And you're obviously, you know more about Phil than we do. You were much, even though you weren't covering the Knicks per se, you were much closer to that situation. I can't remember anything like that ever in the history of ever, where the president is just going in on his best player in the ways that Phil would do that.
Totally bizarre. Totally bizarre. I don't understand it. I didn't get it. Were these like old school motivational tactics? I mean, if so, that just doesn't work anymore. And it just drove the wedge even further between them. Things got really bad. I mean, it was, you know, and we didn't ever, I mean, the guys who cover the team still didn't speak very often, but then he would go on Twitter and kind of make these weird statements that were clearly about Carmelo, and then people would get on him, and then Phil would be like, well, that wasn't about Carmelo. And it's like, how could it not be about Carmelo? It's like, all this is weird stuff. It's like, you don't need this. You guys are like, 20 and 50. What are you doing? So yeah, I totally agree. Well, Phil was just a different team president. He was so involved in like the day to day and kind of stepping on Jeff Hornacek's feet in practice, and really just sort of cast this shadow. And you know, he wanted to coach, but I don't think physically he could. And I think he had trouble sort of, you know, accepting that he was not the coach anymore, and he had to be team president, and he wanted to be coach, and he made them play the triangle. The players didn't want to do the triangle. The coaches didn't want to run the triangle. And it was just like, he wanted to prove that the triangle could work. And you know, it was a disaster though. He drafted Porzingis. That was good. They have a chance now to basically start over. Although, I mean, they did commit a fortune to Joakim Noah. That'll be a problem.
Man.
Unless he can, you know, sort of find himself again. But, you know, he's got chronic injuries. I'm skeptical. It didn't work. And it's going to take a while for that team to be relevant again, I think. This is going to be a really tough season for them, obviously.
Scott, what do you know about Scott Perry and how he's going to work with the Knicks? Because Scott Perry is a guy who goes back with Sam Presti. He has a relationship with Presti dating back to the Sonics days. And it seemed like they were able to engineer this deal pretty quickly. And Scott Perry was able to, you know, send Melo out on good terms, as you said, because when Melo got here, he didn't really have any bad things to say about the Knicks. Like, he just kind of talked about how it was a situation where, you know, they were worried about him having to go to camp and whether or not he was going to go into camp, and then they made it work. So do you feel like the Knicks are going in the right direction with Scott Perry?
Yeah, I mean, everything I've heard, and one of my coworkers did a long profile on Scott. I haven't met him. You know, my impression are that he's very meticulous, he's very careful, very organized. And that was kind of reflected in how he dealt with the Carmelo situation when he came in. Like, he didn't make any rash moves. He really waited. I mean, he waited and didn't make a move until the weekend training camps were starting. You know, that's pretty judicious to kind of wait and hang on and try to get the best deal he could. For months after he took the job. And I think he did make the right move, trading him. I think he didn't want that. If you're trying to build, I mean, it's become cliche around the NBA, but if you're trying to rebuild and you've got young pieces, you want a fresh start. And Carmelo wasn't going to be helpful this season for where they're trying to go. I mean, they're going to be awful. They're going to be one of the worst teams in the league, most likely. But no Carmelo means more opportunities for the young guys they want to develop. It probably means a worse record. It means a better draft pick. We'll see. I mean, I don't know much about the guy, to be honest. But, he has a really solid reputation around the league, it seems like. And I think for that job in New York, you need a guy who's very judicious, will be careful, because they've wasted so many picks and made so many bad deals in recent years that have really put them in this hole. So this is, having guys very careful, maybe that's the right approach at this point.
Did you, Scott, you said that you had written, pre-written, as we all do, a thing about him getting traded to Houston, and you didn't see Oklahoma City coming, and we didn't either. And the main reason we didn't is because we didn't think he would agree to come here. The idea was like, oh, Carmelo's going to want to play with one of his guys. He's going to want to play with Chris Paul in a bigger market. Maybe he would go to Cleveland just because he could play with LeBron. But we didn't know a lot about the relationship with Westbrook. It apparently exists. Westbrook is not a big recruiter. But they did have a pre-existing relationship. They're both Jordan brand guys. We knew they knew each other. But like, just from a standpoint of like the idea that he agreed to come to the middle of the country and play in Oklahoma City, did that surprise you?
Yeah. How is he fitting in so far? I mean, does he say he likes it?
It's hard to tell. I mean, I don't even know if he has a place to live yet or if he's still in the hotel. Like, I don't know much about his situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. This is going to be an interesting season to see. I mean, if they really do well and they're successful and like they've got a team that maybe can compete for a championship, like, how big is his desire to go to L.A.? That's going to be interesting. Is it going to be kind of like, well, he wants to go home. He wants to be on that sort of stage. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I have no idea. You guys have more sort of insight into that than I do. But, yeah, it's a one-year experiment, really. I think it's probably the most interesting experiment in the league this year, for sure.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. In terms of a short-term thing, it's by far, I think, the most interesting thing.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see particularly how he handles that early termination option he has in his contract. What is he going to want? Does he feel like he can get, a sizable deal on the market? I don't know if he's going to get the $28 million he would have made just opting into that final year if he goes and becomes a free agent, but Is there a length of time he's looking for that the Thunder might not offer him? Or I wonder what the situation is going to be like for Melo when he gets ready to re-sign. Is he going to feel comfortable here playing with Russell Westbrook long-term?
Yeah, absolutely. The same thing is true of kind of Paul George, right? I mean, that's it's the same dynamic. I mean, maybe these guys like become like the best friends, and they think they can make it work here, and they like Oklahoma, and but it's interesting. I was sort of fascinated that Russell opted in, and that he's going to be there long term. Does he know something about those two guys that we don't know? Does he know something about free agency next summer? Or maybe he just loves it there.
I think
a possibility.
They were always sort of internally, always fairly quietly optimistic that he was going to do this, and he is, as we talked about earlier, he is hard to know. He's hard to know what he's thinking or why he's thinking it, because he just doesn't give very much of himself. That is an enormous understatement to say he doesn't give much of himself to you in terms of his like public persona. He's a really private guy. But I do think what little we do know of him is like he's a creature of habit. He likes having things the same way. And so uprooting, I think, is a tricky thing for him. I think it would be a little weird for him. He's got such a... He's such a presence in the organization. He has so much say in what happens and how things are operated. And I think that would be a hard thing for him to relinquish and go somewhere else and try to establish. So it's not that surprising to me. I always thought there was a really good chance he would stay. I'm a little surprised ultimately he signed the 5-year now, because he could get the same deal at the end of the year, and he could have kind of waited and seen what these other guys do, and he had a couple more options. He could have opted into something. He could have signed to something a little shorter with some option years on the tail end of it. He could have gotten the no-trade clause like Carmelo had if he had waited a year. So there were some reasons to wait, but, you know, he, again, hard to know what he's going to do. It was always hard to predict him.
Very unknowable, right?
Yeah, yeah, just a really challenging guy to sort of get to know, and that's how he wants it, by the way. That's by design.
And he won't have to, by doing this now, he just doesn't have to deal with that noise. Like, you know, if he didn't sign anything, he was going to have to deal with these questions all season long, and everyone's going to be on edge.
We all know how much Russell Westbrook likes questions, too. So
all questions.
Exactly.
But he actually, you know what, he got asked about that, about, like, you know, well, is it a relief that you won't have to deal with this? And he was like, I just wasn't going to deal with it anyway, which is, it's true. He wasn't. He wasn't going to deal with it.
He's been in playoff form so far.
Yeah.
This preseason, in terms of his disdain for the media and their fool-headed questions.
Yeah, he's ratcheted it up.
He's bringing his fastball high and tight.
Yeah.
How many of those interactions has he had with Fred?
One.
I don't know.
One. At least one.
We've all gotten a piece.
Yeah. Everybody's all gotten a piece. Little. Everybody's gotten some. He was saying this is going to be good in the midst of one of my questions once. That happened.
Oh, my God. That's great.
That was after one of the preseason
Every one of us has gotten a piece. Credit to Russell. He's been an equal opportunity employer this preseason. He's given everybody a piece, and it's been share the wealth. So to speak, from Russell Westbrook early in the season. Scott, where do you have the Thunder finishing in the West this year?
Oh, God. I'm gonna go out on a limb. I'm going to say the Warriors are going to win the conference. They'll have the best record.
Ooh, probably. You're bold.
No Paul Pierce.
Man, the Rockets are also in the Western Conference, and they're very good.
Yes.
Both of those things are true.
I did not break that news to you.
So I would have the Thunder third.
That's fair.
Who else is out of them?
That seems about right.
That's about right. I think it's going to be – I think everyone is severely underestimating the San Antonio Spurs.
Oh, I forgot about the Spurs. Oh, my God. How could I do that?
This is the Spurs fans right now are just – some Spurs fan is going to listen to this and say, see, they're always doing this. I know.
Because
we're not flashy.
Well, they're due for a step back, aren't they?
They were due for a step back a decade ago, man. We can't keep doing this.
It is true.
We need to stop.
I think it's because this year the teams around them went out and did so much, and they were kind of like,
let's
re-sign LaMarcus Aldridge.
Really splashy moves,
right?
You know? And like everyone kind of forgot. Everyone's looking at the teams that made big moves, like, oh, brand new. But that was telling me. How can I forget the Spurs? Oh my God, I might have to slide them and drop the Thunder to four. I don't know. That's the thing. The Thunder are it's so hard to know. I just don't know how good they'll be. I have no idea. I think they'll be very good. I don't know if they'll be. And also, it does take time for like players to adjust to each other. Like it's not going to be. They're not going to be clicking flawlessly immediately. Even the Cavs, the Cavs struggled when LeBron came back to Cleveland initially. They had some issues early in that season, I remember. I don't know. I'm mumbling at this point.
That's all right. That's all right. You're allowed to, you know, like you're allowed to take the total cop out thing, which is like, oh, I think they'll be the best. You know, maybe they'll be the second best team by the playoffs, but maybe they won't have the second best record. That's what I keep saying.
the thing is, I didn't have to do like a big season preview with predictions this year. That actually is like a useful exercise to like familiarize yourself with a lot of these teams and kind of like, well, maybe they could be, you know, they could be winning 58 games. I don't know. I'm always wrong about that stuff anyway.
I haven't really stressed beyond the top four seeds anyway. Like, everybody's like, oh, who are your top eight in it? I'm like, I don't know past four. And I haven't really thought about past four.
There's a drop-off after four. I think that's why it's hard to pick those four. Well, it's hard to pick two, three, and four in order because those three are just, to me, there's like the Warriors are a tier, and those next three teams are a tier. And that's really all that matters because we don't know the ins and outs of how they're going to play together and what's going to work and what's not going to work. So, look, those are the next three teams. And then after that, it's Denver and Minnesota, and then there's a drop-off after that, and that's a madhouse beyond
now Minnesota's better than Denver. I'm just gonna put that out there. Minnesota's better. They're probably gonna play more defense than Denver. You'd imagine. You'd hope.
Yeah.
Like if Tibbs doesn't have Minnesota playing more defense than Denver, he's got a problem.
Yeah.
And Cat's gonna make a jump.
Yeah.
Another jump. Incredible. He's gonna dunking on Stephen Adams.
He's gonna score 70 against the Thunder if he makes another jump.
Okay. Let's wrap this up. Scott. We'll
please, God.
Make it stop. Scott, we're going to see you in a couple of days. Good luck to you tonight in Cleveland with Kyrie and LeBron.
Hope you can find something to write off that game.
Going to be pretty boring, probably.
Do you already have a...
And the funny thing is, I mean, I'll probably write about Kyrie because I wrote something about LeBron already, so you know, all the focus is going to be on Kyrie. Also, the funny thing right now is that as of 5:30 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday, LeBron is still a game time decision. Who in the world thinks he's not playing tonight?
He's totally playing.
He's a sprained ankle.
Scott, can you give us a little preview of the big Josh Huestis piece you're coming in to write this week?
He plays for the Thunder, right?
Correct.
Yeah. All right, good start.
Okay. That's good. Well, Carmelo plays for the Thunder, too. We established that earlier.
That is absolutely correct.
You know what I'm doing in Oklahoma City? I am covering the game, and I'm going to write what Carmelo says, and then I'm going to go home.
Okay.
That seems like a pretty good...
And then you get to see how appreciated Enes Kanter was in his time in Oklahoma City, because I'm sure his ovation will be pretty raucous, I'd imagine.
Really interesting guy, right?
Yes.
Super smart, you know, very super interesting background.
Hey,
I think we might have something coming on him soon, hopefully, one of my coworkers.
Speaking of interesting guys, you're in Cleveland. There's a game. Is there any chance the amazing Slotek is performing at halftime of that game tonight?
Oh, he would have told me, right? I'd be really upset if you were here and he didn't tell me.
Yeah.
That is my guy.
Yeah, I know. If you haven't, by the way, if you haven't read it, just Google Slotek and Cassiola and find Scott's story about that. That's the dude that stacks the chairs at halftime of NBA games. You've all seen him. He stacks the chairs and like does handstands on the top of a stack of chairs, and Scott's story about him is fantastic.
You gave our listeners two really easy names to Google.
Slotek and Cassiola.
And Cassiola.
I tell you what, just Google New York Times NBA chair guy. You'll probably find it that way.
The world's, he calls himself the world's oldest...
Daredevil?
I don't remember if it's world's oldest acrobat or world's oldest chair acrobat. I can't remember.
I thought he said Daredevil to me at one point. I did talk to him talked to him for a much smaller story, and you had done a thing on a very large scale. That is, seriously, if you like the NBA, you've seen this guy. It's a very cool story.
Thanks, man.
Scott, thanks for coming on, man. We're going to have to get you back on sometime this year, maybe this week. You know, we'll see what happens. But I appreciate you coming on, man.
No, I appreciate you guys. I'll see you maybe tomorrow night.
Can't wait.
Great.
And thanks for joining us on the Thunder Buddies podcast, everyone. 2 days till the season starts. Get your popcorn ready. We'll see you later.